ambalo la mganga the acting committee secretary or international organization. Today the chairperson is off sick for the entire week, so we'll have to elect an acting chairperson for the day. So I'll now call upon the nomination. Honorable Mugu.
Can I nominate the Honorable Ruth Mahau to chair the committee, please?
Okay. Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. I would like to apologize for a late start. It was for reasons beyond our control. The agenda for today is the... We have the following apologies. The one is from the chairperson of the portfolio committee, Honorable Tulas Messi, who is off sick for the week. And the other one is from General Volumisa. And the other one is from Ms. T. Sunduza. And the Honorable M.C. Manana. Okay, this one is from the Honorable Mukhalapa from the DA. And the last one is from the Honorable Dudley. They are all members of the portfolio committee and they have had not to be present today for other reasons. They are representing others, the youth in a conference in Mexico, others the youth in South Africa, and so on and so on. So members, I think those apologies are in order unless otherwise advised by members. I see no indication. That means the apologies are taken as valid according to the standards of Parliament. We now have the opportunity to hand over to the department to brief us on the... Okay. Yes, Honorable Mugu.
I thought you were going to ask whether we adopt the agenda or not, because I have two small items I wanted to add.
Okay. Can I allow you to do that?
Sure, thank you. I just wanted us to discuss the issue of the dissolution of the SADC tribunal, and also to consider a visit of a Vietnamese delegation in South Africa after the presentation by the department.
Okay, can we put that as a last item that we will deal with
at
item 4, and
right.
Then we will see how to process it further.
Yes.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
According to the notice members have received, the first briefing was to be about the CCW, but unfortunately that won't be dealt with today for reasons that could not be overcome, and therefore we only have one briefing from the department, that is, will be on the TDCA. And before they can take us to a presentation, I will give them an opportunity to introduce themselves. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
I am Jan van Vollenhoven, and I am the head of the business unit for European organizations with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. And with me is our colleague, Mr. Ernest Hofer, who is parliamentary officer. And Mpho Ndimande, who is assisting Mr. Hofer in the International Relations Office of Parliament. Now, firstly, Madam Chair, bring you the greetings and the highest regard from my minister, who is in China with the president, my deputy ministers also, who are in cabinet today, my director general, who is in China with the president, and my deputy director general has been unfortunately in an accident and is recuperating at home, and has therefore asked me to stand in for them and share the information with you. Madam Chair, before I continue, please guide me in your expectation whether I should go through every slide and every article in detail, or whether I should give you a summary and leave it for questioning. I will be guided by you.
Members, what would you prefer the department to do, to guide you throughout the slides or just a summary? Which one will be more beneficial to you as members for this exercise? Honorable Ngonyama?
I propose that the department takes us through in detail and on the slide.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For obvious reasons, because that will obviate questions at the end. Otherwise, if you give us a summary, then we'll ask so many questions.
Madam Chair, that is perfectly important. We will then start by letting me just introduce to you a couple of salient points about the TDCA, which is a very, very important foundation for the legal relationship between South Africa and the European Union. You may recall that in 2007, we entered into a strategic partnership with the European Union and committing ourselves to cooperation on a strategic level for the benefit of both entities, with the emphasis on development and also with reflection on the development needs of the region and the continent. The TDCA then, which was entered into in 1999, forms the legal foundation for this strategic partnership, and for that reason, a very, very important piece of international agreement that we have ahead of us. So, in 2004, during the midterm review of the TDCA, it was decided that it needs to be updated, and the extent of the update and the revision to the TDCA was really to broaden its scope and to expand on the areas of cooperation between the South Africa and the European Union due to the great benefits that this agreement has shown for both sides. The formal negotiations on the launch of the review was started in March in 2007, and it was led by the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, since it is the custodian of the implementation of the TDCA agreement. We included all the government departments affected by the negotiations in the process, and we have added and revised 35 articles within the TDCA. Now, the revision of the trade chapters of the TDCA was referred to the EFTA negotiations, which is still underway with the European Union, and therefore those remain in suspension, or the review of those remain in suspension, and today we are not going to talk about those provisions. We are only going to consider the non-trade and non-trade related aspects of the TDCA, and the amending agreement was then signed by the minister during the Claymont summit pending ratification by Parliament. So, if we now go to the background of the TDCA, it was the first bilateral agreement that South Africa entered into with the European Union, and it was partly implemented in January and came to full implementation
January 2000 and full implementation in 2004, following the final ratification by Parliament. Now, the TDCA includes chapters on political dialogue, trade-related affairs, economic cooperation, development cooperation, and then cooperation in other areas. The trade liberalization is asymmetrical, but we're not going to focus on that today because we're not talking about the trade chapters. And during the midterm review, it was decided, as I've indicated in my opening remarks, that it needs update and expansion, and the revision was started then in March 2007. I've indicated that we have focused on three negotiating groups, including all relevant departments as the matters came up for consideration. There was a political dialogue group, which was led by international relations and cooperation, economic and other areas focus group, which was also led by Durko, and then development cooperation, which was led by the National Treasury, who, as you will be aware, is the custodian of all incoming development assistance to South Africa. Obviously, here now, the trade and trade-related chapters does not feature, because that was taken out and put into the EPA negotiation. 35 articles were revised and initialed, and the amending agreement was then, as I said, signed in Claymont in September of 2009. In this context, the review is mandated in terms of the agreement itself. The agreement stipulated that there would be, after 5 years, a review of the agreement, which was then duly done. It has been very beneficial to South Africa, especially a way it is measurable in concrete terms is to see how trade has grown exponentially. That in the first part of the term of the agreement, trade grew by 234%, and between 2004 and 2007, when we started the review, trade grew by a further 170% from that 2004 benchmark. So, development assistance is also part of this TDCA agreement, and it is important to note that we have our own budget line as South Africa in the EU budget in terms of the country strategy program for South Africa, which is very different from any of the other ACP countries, who we are the only one who have that. Now, it is also important to note that when we talk about development assistance, we also include in this preferential loans from the European Investment Bank. And our aid, country strategy program contribution from the European Union is about 950 million euros in a 6-year cycle from 07 to 13. And the same cycle also accounts for the European Investment Bank with 100 million in loans for infrastructure, especially in South Africa. And we have just asked during the midterm review of that part of the European Investment Bank's own mandate to increase the South African allocation in this particular period of 07 to 13 by another 300 million euros in order for us to expand further on the market demand that currently exists for infrastructure projects, and due to the fact that this 900 million is basically already taken up as it stands and committed. So the TDCA then allows for a very broad range of cooperation between the European Union, its 27 member countries, and South Africa. And it entrenches in, this cooperation at a level that we are exploring much deeper cooperation at this point. There is currently no financial commitments to either side in the implementation of this agreement. Now we get to the detail of the agreement, and before we go into the particular articles, let me just point out to you that as we now have rolled up the implementation of the TDCA, we have established dialogue forums to promote the implementation of the TDCA in specific technical areas. That have already been established is the Peace and Security Dialogue Forum, which has been going since May of 2008. The annual consultations of our development cooperation and surveillance and assistance that we receive from the European Union has been established since 1994. We have a joint science and technology cooperation agreement that has been established in 1997. And this is probably the flagship of all the cooperation forums at this particular point, together with the annual consultation, because it is a very, very active and a very productive forum. We have established a forum on environment and sustainable development, to which terms of reference have been agreed in May 2007. We have established a migration dialogue forum, with terms of reference agreed to in November of 2008. A health dialogue forum, terms of reference agreed to in November 2008. Space cooperation, terms of reference agreed in 2008. Energy dialogue forum, with terms of reference agreed to in January 2009. A maritime transport cooperation forum, with terms of reference agreed to in 2009. A joint parliamentary committee, which meets twice a year, established in February 2007. An ICT dialogue, which is just currently getting off the ground. Now, we also have, in terms of this agreement, the following dialogue forums under construction, if I can use that word, and that is one for education and training, for crime and justice cooperation, for social dialogue, for customs cooperation, statistics cooperation, and cooperation in culture. The ones that are being front-loaded for establishment is education and training, social dialogue, because it works with issues of job creation and customs, in order to ensure that DERCO, in terms of this agreement, also emphasizes the front-loaded five priorities of government as we see it. We have expedited those. Now, let us get into some of the meat and some of the very important parts of the changes in this agreement. Firstly, if we look at the preamble of the agreement, it is important to note that the recital which has been added, recognizing that disarmament and non-proliferation in the treaty system has to be respected in all its components. We were confronted, as you members may recall, on the briefings on the review of the first review of the Cotonou Agreement, that the European Union introduced in the preamble and as an essential element of the agreement articles on non-proliferation. While those submissions by the European Union were silent on the matter of disarmament, it was South Africa's principal position that disarmament and non-proliferation are inextricably linked, two sides of the same coin, and that if the European Union expects of, in the ACP context, commitment from the ACP countries towards non-proliferation, our question was why be silent on the European Union commitment and its obligation under existing international agreements towards disarmament, and we thought it was untenable that we only talk about non-proliferation in this example. South Africa was then advised to take this matter up in its own TDCA review negotiations, which ran parallel to the ACP Cotonou Agreement with the European Union revision at the time. Now, it is important to note that this review of the TDCA, this establishes that link between disarmament and non-proliferation, and that the treaty system in all its components is of vital importance, and that progress should be made in the implementation of all the obligations deriving from it. South Africa's inclusion of the reference to disarmament with this paragraph is a very important point of principle development, since it is the first time that the EU has been willing to not only focus on including matters of non-proliferation, but also of disarmament as an essential element of an agreement. It is, to our information, the first time that the European Union has entered into such important distinctions with a developing country. When we look at further essential elements of the agreement, a new matter that the European Union brought forward as an essential element is the respect for democratic principles and fundamental human rights, as they are enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as well as cooperation on disarmament and non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, were all three categories the essential elements of this agreement. What we understand by an essential element is that any violation of these principles will result in the termination of the agreement. So although we have here in front of us a trade and development cooperation agreement, we now have as an essential element that if the principles of democracy, of fundamental human rights, and of cooperation on disarmament and non-proliferation are violated, that it will terminate the agreement in its entirety. Now, if we move forward, in terms of information society, we find that the article has been reworded to provide for broader cooperation. The cooperation will now be in terms of the development of the information society and will harness ICT as enabling tool of socio-economic development in an information age. And the cooperation will include dialogues on information exchange and possible technical assistance on the different aspects of building the information society. So as we know that the world of globalization and international commerce and the global context, that this is also a very important underpinning of our economic agenda in South Africa. When we get to Article 57, we see that the focus now becomes on energy security and on the promotion of cleaner energy technologies. Here we have also, within the Development Cooperation Forum on Energy, made great progress in things like carbon capture and carbon storage cooperation and technological innovation. We also look at the regulatory cooperation in terms of emphasizing cleaner energy and energy. In terms of transport, let me just see, I'm missing mining and minerals. The emphasis falls on to promote beneficiation locally in our mineral sector and for opportunities to collaborate in the development of mineral beneficiation. As you want to imagine, it is an important underpinning also of job creation within South Africa, and this is being front-loaded for that. Up to date, we have not yet been able to establish a cooperation forum, but this is to follow on the other cooperation forums. May I point out at this point that the cooperation forum being established under the TDCA is not a fixed number. It is open to any form of cooperation anywhere, and henceforth the TDCA may be amended ad hoc as it requires further cooperation to be rolled out. When we look at transport cooperation, we see that it is now split into two, and you will see that it follows on this is also a maritime transport article that it entered into. In terms of transport, the emphasis falls on firstly rail transport, and transport safety and security policies and regulation framework. Also to be included now is a maritime transport article which emphasizes market administration, efficient transport services for international sea trade, management of force and fleet, maritime security, training, safety standards, prevention of maritime pollution. It's a very broad area of cooperation. I need to point out here, however, that under transport, there is also the matter of air services cooperation, which has been confronted with the matter that the existing bilateral air services agreement between South Africa and the European Union has been declared illegal within the European Union by the European Court of Justice, to the extent that it has been ruled that the effect of bilateral air services agreements, not only with South Africa, all the bilateral air services agreements that the European Union had previously entered into with the rest of the world, have been declared invalid. Because in European law, as it is now developed through its unification process and integration process, discriminates between European airlines internally. For that reason, we have been approached to regularize our air services agreement by either entering into a horizontal air services agreement with the European Union or by updating the individual air services agreement. This matter has been taken under advisement by the Department of Transport. A study has been commissioned about the advantages and potential disadvantages of entering into a horizontal air services agreement. That matter is still in the decision-making process for political decision-making as to which way to continue. But for that reason, the European Union has said that they cannot cooperate under transport on air services until this matter has been regularized. And South Africa has at the first summit in Bordeaux has agreed to regularize in a matter that we see fit this anomaly that exists at present. So air services cooperation will only be resumed after we have resolved the air services matter as it stands. There is also now an article on tourism which has been broadened, and the emphasis here is on promoting cooperation and the development of local communities in tourism cooperation between South Africa and the European Union. When we look at development cooperation, we find that the expansion of the article, the amendments relate more to commitment of meeting the Millennium Development Goals and in doubling our efforts in meeting the targets of the Monterrey Financing for Development Conference, achieving the outcomes of the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation on the WSSD, as well as expressing support for the African Union and its socio-economic program. On science and technology, we find that it accounts for a further expansion of the already impressive work that is being done within this forum. And the partnership and cooperation under the EU's framework for programs and the strengthening of South Africa's science and technology capability. It is important here to notice that South Africa is already the fourth largest participant in the 55 billion euro framework for research program. We come only after the United States, Russia, and Japan in the world in cooperating with the European Union on science and technology. And this is a major achievement and a feather in our cap, and shows what can be gained to fully exploit the opportunities established by the trade and cooperation agreement between the development cooperation agreement between South Africa and the European Union. We also just need to point out that we have a separate science and technology agreement with the European Union, which was entered into in 1997. When we look at the review of the articles on the environment, the emphasis here is an expansion of existing cooperation also to include air quality in the cooperation. When we look at culture, we find here that we have a dialogue also now to cooperate and develop a formal dialogue on culture, committing both parties to cooperate in relevant international fora such as UNESCO in order to enhance the protection and promotion of culture and cultural diversity and to foster intercultural dialogue at an international level. If we look at social issues, which is an important one, which is now under construction, we look at the broader dialogue in terms of the area of employment and social policy, which will include questions relating to the social development of a post-apartheid society, poverty alleviation, decent work for all, social protection, unemployment, gender equality, violence against women, children's rights, persons with disabilities, older persons, youth, labor relations, public health, safety at work, and population. These are all the important areas of this very wide and broad level of dialogue and policy exchange of views between South Africa and the European Union. Now, if we get to Article 90, we find that it's been a substantially altered article that relates with the fight against drugs and money laundering. And it has been retitled to refer to cooperation on illicit drugs, allowing for cooperation to ensure a balanced and integrated approach towards addressing the drug problem that we face jointly between South Africa and the European Union to reduce the supply and trafficking and the demand for illicit drugs, which we all know is a scourge in both our societies. Cooperation is very important. Now, we come to an area of very substantial change within the TDCA, which leads with matters of security, organized crime, small and light weapons, mercenary activity, the International Criminal Court, and cooperation on migration. Firstly, we find that the whole matter of weapons of mass destruction and their delivery is that, as we had pointed out earlier, is an essential element of this agreement, committing the parties into strengthening the multilateral disarmament and non-proliferation system and countering the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and their means of delivery through full compliance and national implementation of their respective existing obligations and commitments under relevant treaties and agreements and other relevant international instruments on disarmament and non-proliferation, as it may be appropriate. It commits the parties to fully implement and comply with all internationally legally binding instruments, as well as establish and maintain an effective system of national export control. Now, this is an extremely important matter of principle, as I've pointed out before, because originally the text that was introduced by the European Union only placed obligations on South Africa in terms of non-proliferation and was completely silent on the European Union's obligation of non-proliferation too, but also of disarmament. Because we reminded the European Union that South Africa in fact is the first country in the world that has voluntarily disarmed the state of any nuclear capability, gave it up, and we insisted on the fact that both disarmament and non-proliferation be inextricably linked. That point has now been established. Let us move to combating terrorism. Here, of course, is a very much a post 9/11 kind of heightening of fighting terrorism that we see also in these negotiations, consisting mainly of sections that commit the parties to combating terrorism and cooperation on the prevention and suppression of acts of terrorism in accordance with the Charter of the United Nations and the international law and relevant convention and instruments, and the exchange of information on terrorist groups and their networks an exchange on views and means and methods to counter terrorism, cooperation in training, and exchange of experiences in the prevention of terror. Those we have seen also to be functioning very well. Money laundering and terrorism financing. We can see that the financing was dropped out of the earlier articles on, on drugs and money laundering, and it was brought in here by the terrorism Article 91C. In this instance, the parties have agreed to cooperate to prevent the use of their financial systems for laundering of the proceeds of criminal activities in general and from offenses also relating to illicit drugs and psychotic substances, or psychotropic substances rather, in particular. It will also include administrative and technical assistance for the purpose of developing and implementation regulation for the efficient functioning of suitable standards. In Article 91D, we get to cooperation and the introduction of articles on organized crime, and here the emphasis is on organized crime and especially financial crime, including exchanges on fighting corruption. Small arms and light weapons, and we may consider that in our context and in our continent, this is the weapon of mass destruction. And it is a very important introduction in 91E to cooperate where we agree on to prevent and combat and eradicate illicit trade in small arms and light weapons in all its aspects as set out in the UN Program of Action, and to address the issue of the excessive accumulation of small arms and light weapons. And in the background context to this, we emphasize the fact that it is extremely important to security on the continent, and that this really is the scourge of our continent, the illicit trade in light weapons and small arms. Mercenary activities was also included here to prevent the mercenary activities and coordinates and obligations of international conventions and instruments and their respective legislations and regulations implementing such obligations. I put it into this. The International Criminal Court, we reiterated our support collectively with the European Union for the International Criminal Court and to promote the universality and integrity of their own status and its related instruments with in cooperation on migration, and we are approaching the end of our presentation, the last element to deal with here, that we have introduced a very broad article on in-depth cooperation between South Africa and the European Union on migration dialogue. It is focused on strengthening cooperation to cover the following areas: fair treatment of foreign nationals residing legally in each other's territory, some visa issues of mutual respect, simplifying entry procedures for nationals of both parties, travel document security and identity issues, and reducing illegal immigration and to readmit their illegal migrants. Now, Madam Chair, in conclusion, let me refer to the perspective on South Africa declining to ratify this agreement. I'd like to argue that South Africa entered into a strategic partnership with the European Union for reasons of mutual benefit. South Africa is one of nine countries in the world with which the European Union has entered into a strategic partnership, and those are Brazil, Canada, China, India, Japan, Russia, Ukraine, and the United States of America. And I may point out that South Africa was approached by the European Union in this regard to establish such a strategic partnership, and South Africa has agreed to enter into it. In the strategic partnership, we have a joint plan of action. That this joint plan of action complements the cooperation that we have agreed to in the TECA in 1999, and would like to submit that we want to expand substantially in the review of this TECA that is tabled before you today. Non-ratification of this TECA review would effectively imply and give a signal to a key strategic partner that we have entered into, and would, in a sense, detract from that strategic partnership. The revised TECA, for the first time, commits the European Union, I want to reiterate again, to recognize the inextricable link between disarmament and non-proliferation, and the obligations under all international agreements and relevant protocols in this regard. And it is significant progress being made in the implementation of this principle. South Africa's insistence on this reference to disarmament is an important point, is an important development, and it is, as I pointed out, the first time that the European Union has agreed to this linkage. And following ratification, this is foundation to take South Africa's interest in dealing with the matters of weapons of mass destruction further in reflecting our country's policies in this regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Wollerhoven. And your spelling, sometimes I don't get it right. You have to bear with me. Members, that is the presentation on the revision of the TDCA, and the key articles that have been revised have been referred to in detail as per the request. Now, members are free to further interact with the presentation. Honorable Dr. Kwerenoff, Honorable Mubu, Honorable Makama, in that sequence.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to Mr. Van Vollenhoven for a very informative presentation, but also in detail. The other point that was on the agenda today, we're not going to discuss it, and that is the amendments to the Convention on Prohibitions and Restrictions on the Use of Certain Conventional Weapons. My question is whether this convention that we're not discussing today is also included in the ratification now of the disarmament, specific linkages between the non-proliferation and disarmament, because I think I'm right that we have an act in this country that we spelled out quite clearly certain prohibitions on the use of conventional weapons, like non-detectable fragments, blinding laser weapons. In that same act, we also have certain restrictions referring to mines, booby traps, and other devices, and incendiary weapons. This act that we have, and this presentation that's not going to take place today about this convention on certain conventional weapons, referring to your presentation, will that be included in the agreement between South Africa and the EU? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think it highlights quite some important amendments to the agreement through the revisions of the different articles. But I have got two questions that I want clarity on. It's common knowledge that South Africa has been, over the past years, I think since 1994, been
a safe haven for fugitives, criminals particularly, from European countries that have found refuge here. And actually, even in the very recently, I think a week or two, we've heard of a story of one European that is, has successively defended his continued stay in this country. Because they have money, anyway, these people. They can go through the courts and defend themselves. But my question is, if we have this kind of agreement with the European Union, why is it that we don't have strong extradition laws that should be able to get rid of people like the people that I'm referring to? Because I see that in Article 91C, new Article 91C, you talk about this, the issue of, but I don't see where it says, in terms of strengthening the extradition methods, how do we deal with fugitives that are hiding here? And there are many of them, of course, some of them probably come here under different names. We don't know them. But I think many of us know what I'm talking about. The second thing I want to find out is, recently at the AU summit in Kampala, Uganda, the AU passed a resolution not to cooperate with the ICC in the case of al-Bashir of Sudan. In that case, South Africa also went along with that resolution, not to hand over al-Bashir to the ICC. Now, my question is, even before this revision has been ratified, we are already in breach of what we are trying to commit with the EU. I mean, if we don't commit to new Article 91G, how then do we support a resolution like something that comes from the AU, which says we're not going to respect the decision of the ICC because of our commitment to the AU? So to what extent then does our collusion, what I might call collusion with the AU, affect our relationship with the EU in view of this new article that I just referred to? Because I look at this as a contradiction in terms myself. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The issue of extradition has been, I think, sufficiently dealt with by Honorable Mubu. I think I, at this stage, want to express my I think appreciation, Chair, for the fact that alas we've been able to convince our partners in Europe that disarmament and non-proliferation are two sides of the same coin. You will recall there was this stalemate, or not stalemate, but there was this debate around, I think it was the CCW, where the very same issue became, I think at some point we had to accede to an agreement precisely because of the fact that we had those revisions that we wanted to have inserted or done. And I think I just want to express really my I think it's really a principal victory. It takes us forward in terms of how we approach these matters in our view, especially in the international context, and the way in which these world superpowers tend to deal with issues of disarmament and non-proliferation. But the issue of extradition, really, Chair, is the issue. My question: this agreement, at least to the extent that we've it's silent on it, so one would believe that if there are issues of cooperation, that seek to especially deal with issues of money laundering and organized crime at a global scale, drugs, trafficking, even the trafficking of women and children in terms of you know, this international prostitution rings that operate throughout our countries. One, you know, the issue of extradition becomes, in essence, an inextricable part of such cooperation. So how is it dealt with? Is it dealt with country to country, or is it dealt with in the context of our agreement, in the context of the TCCA, and perhaps other agreements with Europe as a regional bloc? Thank you.
Honorable Ngonyama.
Madam Chair, the issue is the information society and ICTs, a very important cooperation agreement. I'm not sure to what extent are we in a position to be taken through in detail on this one, because it impacts quite strongly on the economy of the country. And South Africa is supposed to be positioning itself, in my own view, as the center of ICT within the continent. If we take, for instance, the example of having MTN in South Africa, which is, and having footprints more or less all over the continent. So this would be of great interest. The other one is the point raised by Honorable Magama, the human trafficking. A very pertinent one, especially at this point in time within our country. And there's a bill which is already in motion right now, and public hearings in this regard are taking place. I'm not 100% sure whether that is somehow carried somewhere here, and as part of the one of the articles here, if I can get some clarity on that. The issue of this question of the continent and money's leaving the continent to various places in Europe, is there anywhere or is it captured under money laundering? Because it's a very important element of an agreement that has to be closed off. If you look at the amount of capital which is leaving and irregularly and illegally the continent, and South Africa cannot be outside that room. For now, those are the issues really that I would like to raise. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you respond, I have just one issue to raise. Article 91A is a new insertion at all, or a new article which has been inserted to the TDCA, which deals with proliferation and disarmament. My question is therefore that, was it not possible to create a separate security forum to deal with such issues like it has happened with the ICT, rather than putting everything into the whole agreement? Should we, as a country, for some reason or the other, be regarded as non-compliant to that 91A, we will be penalized on everything that we have agreed upon with the EU. I would just want to check the possibility of us having taken the route of dealing with security issues separately, like we have dealt with the science and technology package. Then I hand over to you to comment on all the issues that have been raised. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to respond to the questions and provide some further information. And let me start maybe by the last part of your question dealing with the entry into the agreement of the combat of weapons of mass destruction, the whole disarmament, non-proliferation issue as an essential element to the agreement that would nullify the agreement if they are violated, together with matters on human rights and matters of democratic principle, which equally, of course, also counts for the European Union. It is we have indeed a forum, the so-called peace and security dialogue forum, in which we engage directly with the European Union Peace and Security Committee. That Peace and Security Committee has undergone a bit of a change after the Lisbon Treaty, where it used to resort under the High Representative for Foreign Relations, which was now Solana, had a particular peace and security leg, which is slightly separate from external relations and development relations. And South Africa, in our strategic partnership with the European Union, used to resort under the Commissioner for Development due to our association with the ACP and our associate membership of the Lomé Convention, and we have only associate membership of that due to the fact that we have our own budget line in the European Union budget, and the ACP, or the so-called EDF, the European Development Fund, then is applied to all other members of the ACP, but not to South Africa. Now, in order to address, at that point with the European Union as a strategic partner, matters of peace and security globally, but with a particular interest on our side on the continent, we established and approached the European Union with the idea to establish a peace and security dialogue in order to link directly into the peace and security structures where the real advice to the Council is happening, is seated, because we were under the Commissioner for Development. Now, post-Lisbon, as you know, all of these external relations functions in the European Union has been unified under the High Representative for Foreign Relations and Security, which is now Baroness Ashton. Her portfolio is vastly more substantive than Solana's ever was under the Nice Treaty, I think it was called. And so Lisbon changed a little bit of that. However, that has been established, and it is still to be determined in the rollout of the European External Action Service as her diplomatic service is going to be called, or the High Commissioner for Foreign Relations and Security Policy is going to be called. It is still to be determined where we will resort under that, because that has not yet been implemented. But wherever and wherever it may be, we have this Peace and Security Cooperation Forum, in which we directly meet with the Peace and Security Committee of the European Union, in which anything of peace and security of any nature, including weapons of mass destruction, may be addressed. If I can, by answering your question, include the question, Madam Chair, by the Honourable Member, Mr. Cornell, that in, I was trying to find the exact wording here now, but search for that because you have the papers in front of you. In linking disarmament and non-proliferation, we took great pains to ensure that the wording explicitly refers to all the relevant international conventions and agreements, protocols, and regulations, as well as domestic legislation, which means that CCW matters, as they are encapsulated in South African domestic law, is thereby part of this agreement. However, the obligation, of course, where South African domestic law prescribes what happens in South Africa will not be binding in the European Union, but in South Africa. But it will be binding on Europeans who enter South Africa. So it will commit South Africa to implement its domestic law And by implication, it commits the European Union to cooperate with us in the due diligence of implementing that form. So yes, indeed, CCW will be encapsulated in this due to it being part of domestic law and due to it being part of the broader international context of relevant agreements, conventions, and regulations on that. If we then revert back to the question, I think that takes care of Honourable Member Cornell's question, if not, please, indicate. If we then move to the question asked by the Honourable Member Mubu, on the matter of extradition and the problem of European fugitives seeking safety in South Africa and pursuing a sunny life on our beaches with the proceeds of crime internationally. It is important in this context to understand that in this unique relationship with the European Union, where we have a strategic partnership and a legal foundation for South Africa's relationship with the collectivity called the European Union, 27 countries, we also maintain bilateral relationships with the individual member states. Because of the uniqueness of the European Union being an entity that shows signs of shared sovereignty or pooled sovereignty versus the reserve of sovereignty lying with the individual members. So that you could only legally contract, so to speak, with the European Union as an entity on those matters over which the European Union and its Commission has exclusive mandate. They call it has exclusive competency. And as a matter of extradition agreement, there is no pooling of the sovereignty of the member state so that you can contract with the European Union on an extradition agreement for the Union. My understanding is at this point that we can only have those with individual member states. However, you will notice that I mentioned to you that we are in the process of also rolling out crime and justice dialogue forum with the European Union. We are in the process of discussing within the parameters of crime and justice cooperation and to develop terms of reference for that. And I think the question also came from the Honourable Member Magama in terms of smuggling of women and children and international trade in people, and it also came up later, I think, by the Honourable Member Ndanyama, if my notes are correct. Now, in this is all to be considered now in the discussions we gave to have with the European Union, and incidentally, this matter is also on the agenda for the Joint Cooperation Council, which is provided for within the Trade and Cooperation Agreement, which oversees the work of the implementation of the Trade and the TDCA. It is chaired by our Director General, and yet to be seen who is the relevant counterpart after Lisbon. Before Lisbon, it was the Director General for development on the EU side. Now, within this dialogue we're going to have with him on crime and justice, we're going to consider matters of possible cooperation also on the exchange of information between the European Union and South African crime fighting institutions, as well as the matter of illegal migration. Some of these issues kind of cut across different dialogue forms. The trafficking in women and children is a migratory issue as well as a crime issue. And we are establishing the cross-linkages between the different forums where we are dealing with these matters, but certainly the Crime and Justice Dialogue Forum may provide for us to explore the possibility of cooperating through a dialogue also of tightening up on matters of extradition, but those are in principle a bilateral matter and not a competency of the European Commission, as I understand it. Let me see, lastly, the Honourable Member Ngonyama asked on information society. It will be noted that I told you in the briefing earlier that we have been exchanging terms of reference at this point for information society cooperation with the European Union, so that there is at this point to be finalized the terms of reference in the very short term, in the immediate future that we're talking about, for the work to start in exploring this very important, as you've noted, area of cooperation. In the terms of the Honourable Ngonyama's question on money leaving the country, our country, for Europe illegally, may or may not obviously have to do with money laundering. What we really refer to money laundering here is how the money and the proceeds of crime get into the legitimate money exchange systems in South Africa, and to avoid money from the proceeds of crime to be cleaned up, so to speak, and to be made legitimate, both in the case of terrorism as well as international crime. However, I am not entirely sure what the Honourable Member refers to money leaving South Africa illegally. Through fraud and through crime, certainly the cooperation is provided for within the cooperation that we are looking on now in towards crime and justice dialogue cooperation will also be considered there. I think I will leave my responses there, Madam Chair. If there are further follow-ups, I'm happy to reply.
Okay, thank you. Before taking further follow-up, if there are any, there is a note that we have circulated, a letter sort of. Those of you who were watching the news last night, you might have seen that there is a tragic incident that took place in Malin in the Eastern Cape, where an 82-year-old woman was murdered together with four grandchildren. So the family is, it can't afford anything. So that is a request to all in the house, members and all people who are here. Anything that you can put in that as a contribution will help a long way. Are there any members who still want to pursue their questions further? Honorable Mubu?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think the presenter didn't answer the question on the AU resolution regarding cooperation with the ICC, the International Criminal Court.
So by the look of things, did you say he or he did not? He did not. Okay, can you comment on that one?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies, Honorable. I did in fact not refer to that. I omitted that. Let me just my mandate is ready to talk to you about the department's work and bringing the ratification of the TDCA to your attention. And government actions are not for me as a member of the Department of International Relations to comment upon. However, let me say this, that it is my understanding that South Africa indeed is committed to, as it is reflected in this agreement, its respect for the ICC, that it is in fact my information, that it is the express position of government that if any member with an international warrant from the ICC would be found to be present and entering South African territory, that person would be arrested under the obligations under the international treaty, that South Africa has never wavered to commit itself to that. South Africa has, to my understanding, expressed its concern that the issuing of the arrest warrant in the Sudan situation is a very delicate matter in terms of the delicacy of the peace process, and have been party to petitioning for a delay in the matter, but it is my information, and that I share, as I understand it, that we have never contradicted the fact that we have an obligation under the ICC and that we will implement that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Vollenhoven. Members, you would realize that the presentation on the CCW today, together with this revised TDCA, is key, and I would maybe request the committee secretary, before we take the process further, and also asking you, Mr. Eltweather, what time do we have for ratification of this so that we are able to take an informed decision?
Madam Chair, there's no deadline on the ratification, but the sooner it is ratified, the better, because it has been pointed out by the European Union that due to the fact that the matter is not finally dealt with in ratification, that there are areas of cooperation that they cannot implement because they cannot allow or allocate resources to it due to the fact that there's no legally binding agreement on those matters. So the sooner the better, but there's no particular deadline.
So we'll need time to deal with that CCW package, which informs this, and then thereafter we will decide as the portfolio committee as to how we process the issue further and take it to the House for final ratification. I see your hand, Honorable Magama.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Now, in light of the response and your question, I want to get this clear. Is there any reason why we would perhaps object to processing this thing in terms of Parliament's own internal processes? Okay, differently put, is there any reason why we would want to delay the process and perhaps have a second or third bite? No, that's actually really for the committee, for the members.
Well, I would imagine, Chair, that the input from the His Excellency is I don't want to venture to try and pronounce that. It's quite an enlightening one, and to me it goes a long way in setting a very, very firm foundation for further interaction and with the details of the document. It is within that context that I would really say that if it's possible for us as a committee again to have time on our own, guided by the chair, to go through and the agreement and article by article, and see if there are no gaps, and then be in a position to, I'm sure that's what the department would expect from us. It is within that context that I would really urge that we be given more time. Perhaps we'd need either one meeting or two meetings just to go through and the these articles. Thank you.
Members, I think that recommendation is in order. As the portfolio committee, we need to finalize the revision, having our own session on our own, interacting finally with the document, and then taking it to the next level. If there are no further questions on this item, can we step off to the other item? Agreed. And our item was on the any other business by the Honorable Mubu.
Thank you, Chair. I did,
have an opportunity to meet with the Vietnamese ambassador outside of parliamentary work. And he intimated to me that there's going to be a parliamentary delegation visiting South Africa in the, I think, first or second week of next month. Vietnam. In Pretoria, yes. And he said to me that there will be a delegation, parliamentary delegation coming to South Africa. And he was wondering whether the delegation could have an audience with the committee. I said to him that I didn't have the authority to say yes or no, but I did send a request through to the chairperson via the acting secretary of the committee. So I think probably what needs to be done is, if the committee makes that decision, communication has to go directly from the committee, not from myself, but from the administration of the committee, to say to the ambassador whether this is possible or not. Secondly, it's the issue of the SADC tribunal. As we all know that the SADC tribunal is the highest court in the region for available to SADC citizens for arbitration on issues relating to whatever issue that individuals feel that in their own country they have not been treated well, and they can appeal to the SADC tribunal, much like Zimbabwean farmers have been doing, and South African farmers that were dispossessed of their property in Zimbabwe. Now, you will recall that in the last SADC summit, the 10 judges who were appointed to this tribunal had their contracts come to an end, and these contracts were not renewed, pending what the summit, I think, termed a review of the role of the SADC tribunal, something to that effect. Chair, I think it should be something that should cause us a bit of worry, because, as you can imagine, the tribunal means that it has been dissolved. It doesn't exist anymore in the absence of the 10 judges that were appointed from the 10 SADC countries. So I thought that maybe we would debate this matter and resolve in whatever way we might to get clarity as to what the status of this tribunal now is, because as it is now, the SADC tribunal doesn't exist. Thank you.
Members, we have heard the issues as presented by the Honorable Mubu. I think on the first one, the Vietnamese delegation, I'm advised that there is a process that is unfolding, and members will be informed in due course once that process has been finalized, in as far as the meeting is concerned of that group and the portfolio committee. As for the second issue raised by the Honorable Mubu, maybe I'll just give members to comment. And I've noted Honorable Magama and Goranov.
Thank you, Chair. Not Chair. You see, about a week or two ago,
yes,
there was a case where, for an instance, where the information that Honorable Mubu had, Honorable Member, information that Honorable Mubu had, which the minister at the time didn't even, in fact, the deputy minister at the time didn't even have. Now, at the time, Honorable Mubu relied on media reports. Now, Chair, whilst it is important to keep, you know, tabs on what the media is saying about issues, it is equally important that we, as far as we can, and to get information from official sources. Now, I haven't had the opportunity to hear really from official sources, you know, what the situation is around the flowing from the SADC summit. Now, Chair, in light of that, I want to propose that we request the department to brief us, perhaps in our next meeting, about the outcome of the SADC summit, and with specific reference or with special emphasis on the issue raised by Honorable Mubu, so that we are able to discuss the facts around the matter. I think it's premature for us to really venture into debates around the matter and resolve as the member requested.
Chairperson, Ms. Honorable Magama covered me on this tribunal issue. I agree with that. On the first issue, I also heard about the Vietnamese visit, but I think, if I remember correctly, the dates were the first week in October, when Parliament will be in recess. So that complicates it, but it leaves the principle still. If there are foreign embassies approaching the committee of members of Parliament from their countries visiting this Parliament, I think there should be a formal way how do we handle and interact with Parliament as a portfolio committee on international relations. In front of the old assembly currently, there's a Japanese flag and a South African flag. There are currently members of Parliament of Japan visiting the Parliament this week, but this committee doesn't know about it. So somewhere we have to find the link, if there's a need, to interact with foreign visitors, members of Parliament visiting this Parliament.
Okay, on that one, I think, if you remember, the Speaker acknowledged the presence of the Japanese delegation in the House yesterday. So some other visitors are purely the Speaker's visitors, not necessarily coming to the committee, but when the Speaker feels necessary, maybe, or when he or she does not have enough time to deal with such delegations, he would normally refer them to the portfolio committee to deal with that. But for now, as far as I know, it is the Speaker's competency to deal with the Japanese delegation. I would assume that's why he even acknowledged their presence in the House yesterday. Honorable Mubu?
Thank you, Chair. I do agree with the Honorable Koronoff on that issue of the fact that there must be some kind of procedure for interaction between this committee or this parliament with delegations coming from other countries. But in this case, I was approached personally. That's why I referred the matter to the committee secretary, to the chairperson, that they take the normal procedure that has to be done. And I said to the ambassador that I didn't have the competence to do that. So I do understand his point. On the issue of the tribunal, which Honorable Magama referred to, I think I do agree that it's important that we need to have a briefing from the department regarding the position of the SADC on this tribunal. But at the same time, apart from just relying on what is reported in the media, some of us do follow what happens when the summit, for example, when it was happening in Kampala. I was following what the debate was all about and the decisions of that. And just as the decision of the SADC tribunal, the SADC on the tribunal is concerned. So it was not really just because one was following the media, but because one was following what was happening from the, as was reported, the decisions that were being reported. So I think it's personally my responsibility sometimes. I feel that I must follow the things as they happen. But if the committee feels that it's important that we get the department to brief us, I have no problem with that. I'll go with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mubu. Nobody disagrees with you that the matter should be addressed further, but the point or the principles that the Honorables are emphasizing, that as a parliamentary portfolio committee, we should act on verifiable information. We should not just rely on one source of information, but we must have our sources as broad as it is possible for us to take informed decisions. And therefore, we will ask the committee secretary to to ask the department to come and give us the briefing on the SADC with specific reference to the SADC tribunal as requested. And if there is no other issue, can I propose that the meeting be adjourned? Accepted. And I thank you very much. Can I get my love letter back with the notes that I have requested? Even the coins are welcome. And you are all invited to have some snacks outside the committee room. And thank you very much for your cooperation and attendance in this meeting. Thank you.